This podcast is powered by homeschoolbuyerscoop.org. The main question I've been getting recently with the COVID pandemic is, how can we start homeschooling? Some school districts aren't even opening up, and they don't want to be at the mercy of an iPad or computer to do their schoolwork every day. So people are looking into homeschool options. One of those options is joining homeschoolbuyerscoop.org. They do the work for you of searching through the tens of thousands of options of curriculum, and they dial it down to 3 to 5 options of proven, tested, high-quality curriculum. They have over 260,000 families. So they use this membership to go to curriculum companies and say, hey, we want to buy this much of your curriculum. What's your discount you can give us for that? It's just like a bulk discount. It's your Sam's or Costco, but for homeschoolers. If you enter the code Montessori, when you sign up for your free membership, you get the Montessori Mom podcast discount of $5 on your first order. They are family owned and operated. They're homeschoolers themselves that decided, hey, we want the discounts that big schools, public school systems are getting. So how can we join together as homeschoolers and get discounts on curriculum? So check out homeschoolbuyersco-op.org. Hi, welcome to the podcast, Montessori Mom Podcast. I am your host, Danielle Mitchell. Last episode, maybe it was the episode before our last, we had an interview with Kelly on how her daughter was doing with potty training, who is almost 2. She was about to turn 2. You know, we talked a lot in conversation, which I think is really beneficial for a lot of people. You know, hearing other people's experience is often the best teacher. But if you're looking for strict information, tips, tricks, or just like a general basis of potty training, how I potty train, how I implement Montessori and potty training, this is the podcast you want to listen to. I wanted to just kind of go through fundamentals and kind of how I walk through potty training and the bases I like to hit, you know, synchromatically. So I hope you guys get something out of it. So I'll go through the fundamentals of that and then tips for girls, which actually I don't really have any. I just have tips for boys because I have mostly boys and my girl has been so much easier than my boys. I know that's not always the case for me. That has been the case. I'll go through that and then kind of some expectations that you should have in the background of your mind when you start potty training and other tips to just kind of move through it with your child, how to talk to them about it, words to say, you know, little things to say here and there to help it not be a battle and help them be the ones for the motivation and independence to be on them and it not be coming from you and like you're the boss giving orders, but that, you know, this is something that is exciting for them and they get to do and figure out. So some of the fundamentals of Montessori is that whenever they have gross motor movement and they can crawl around, you can start when they crawl or when they're just beginning to walk. If they have the physical ability to climb up on a small potty chair, then you can go ahead and start. I think it's natural for us to go to the bathroom standing up in a kind of like squatting position. You know, it depends on if you're a girl, if you're a boy, if you're going number one or number two. But I don't think it's natural for anyone, and you don't really find that in nature per se, to sit down and rest to go potty. There is usually some type of squatting and active muscles because you are using your muscles whenever you go to the bathroom. So this can be a big change for a child who has been in diapers. You can start potty training when there are newborns. People do that. I'll link some books below if you're interested in that. I actually, my girl is tried to do this with her. I started the newborn potty training with her. That's another option if you're not there yet and you want to start potty training. You really don't have to wait. There's other things you can do, but in terms of getting the kids to sit on the potty themselves. Like, that's kind of what I'm going to be discussing. So gross motor movement, starting to get them to sit on the potty, which is unnatural. So this is a big thing for kids to learn. You're kind of training them against what they've done so far if you haven't done any potty training with them. And, you know, there's, if you've ever heard of the squatty potty, there is this whole theory that it's unnatural to just sit down and rest on a seat to go to the bathroom. And it is easier for us as human beings to squat down and use our muscles. So it really is kind of against human nature to teach them to go to the bathroom this way, in this way. So keep that in the back of your mind, first of all. You know, once you've got number one down, they have gross motor movement. They can move around on their own steam. Make sure that every time you take them to the potty, you want them to do as much as they can to get up on the potty. You want them to get up there on their own steam. So make sure on your little potty chair, if they can climb up onto a toilet that has a toilet seat, you know, you can put those toilet inserts on the top of the big seat and it makes the hole smaller. Has a little more stability for them. If they want to do that or they can do it and that's your preference, go right ahead. I mean, climbers, any kid that's a climber could definitely do that. And they might want to do that because they see you sitting on the big potty. But in terms of a potty chair, you want to make sure it has some type of grip on the bottom. If you don't have it on any type of pad, like if it's on a slick floor, you want to make sure it has that rubber silicone grip lining the bottom. That's really going to help it be more stable. Also, the lower to the ground it is, the more stable it's going to be. And make sure that when they sit on it, if they're that small, it still also, it again needs to be lower to the floor so that their feet are flat, firmly flat on the floor. Otherwise, it's going to be too tall for them to stabilize themselves when they're sitting up, which you can assist. But again, you know, if at all possible, you want to make it to where they can do it themselves. Make it to where they can be as independent as they can be on it. And making the potty short where they can have their feet on the floor and have stability with their legs and use their leg muscles to go to the bathroom is going to be feel more natural for them. And it's going to help them be more stable and feel more comfortable and safe on the potty. Once you notice, also, if you haven't, if you think, okay, they can move around, but I'm still not sure that they're ready yet. If there is a point where you've ever noticed them holding it for a while, you might have to move from disposable diapers to cloth diapers or training underwear in order to recognize that. Some people can. I know they have like the blue lines or the yellow lines on the diapers that turn to blue when they've gone to the bathroom. Those help to notice, but just be observant of their trends. You know, when they're going to the bathroom, like what time of day, if it's after a meal, if it's after nap, when they're going number two. I assume there's like this knowledge in the world that number one means pee and number two means poop. If that's not true, that's what I mean by number one and number two. I know there's people all over the world listening to this, so just want to be clear on that. So that's a big thing, a Montessori thing, is sitting back and observing what your child is doing. Are they holding it? When are they going? How long are they holding it for? Do they have a spot in the house that they like to poop? Because if they are, that shows that they have awareness that something's going on. And that is a, you know, that's a cue right there that they're noticing when things are happening. So they have awareness already of that already. So be observant of that. For example, when my oldest was one, he was holding it all night long. And we were doing cloth diapers then, so it's very easy to tell. And we had a newborn, so I was up at all hours of the night anyways. And so anytime I'd get up to nurse, I'd check his diaper. At that time, we were in a tiny apartment, so we were all in the same bedroom. So I would get up and I would check his diaper. And for a long time, I noticed that he would hold it all night long. And then around 6 a.m., still sleeping, I assume he's waking up a little bit because, you know, it would be when the sun was coming up. Before he woke up completely, he would just unload and he would soak through his nighttime cloth diaper and all through his sheets. I mean, most of the times I start potty training because if I don't, it means there's more laundry for me to do because they're holding it like this and peeing all out of cloth diaper or even all out of disposable diaper. So I would notice that with him. So when I would get up to nurse around like two or three, whatever it was in the middle of the night, I would set the training potty by his bed and I'd get him up, pull his diaper down, set him on the potty. He would wake up enough to pee and then I'd pull his diaper up and lay him down. He'd go right back to sleep. And then I didn't have to wash sheets. So like I observed that that's what was happening. So I would catch him sometime before that, between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. If I didn't have a newborn, I probably wouldn't have woken up for that. That'd have been very difficult for me, but I was already awake. So I was going to do it and save myself the laundry and get him started on potty training. You know, that's a example there of me observing a trend and acting on it. So you just need to do the same for your kids. The observance is a huge part of that. Switching from disposables to cloth diapers also helps them be able to notice this sensation, the physical sensation. I'm sure they have the internal sensation of them going to the bathroom, but then they need that feeling of being wet, whether it's cloth diapers or your training pants, you know, training underwear. That really helps them catch on in that way, because disposables really do keep them dry very well. Cloth diapers are more wet. So, I mean, it's cotton. It's really much more noticeable. And, I mean, a lot of people start just no diaper at all, which all works too. If you want to just go ahead, like you want to immerse them in that feeling for a couple of days and then go to training underwear. There's all kinds of methods, but a big help would be switching from disposable to some type of cloth. Sometimes I wait until I catch them with number two first. When I notice trends of them going number two, I have done that a few times because that's the messiest. So you can wait and not try to put them in training pants or anything. Until that's another option. I've done that several times because I don't like spraying poop out of anything. It's gross. That would be like a huge win if you could just start with poop and then being successful going poop in the potty first. Yeah, I mean, it happens less often, so you have less practice doing it, but you know, that's an option. I did forget to say that before you start any of this, start with changing their diapers in the bathroom instead of on a changing table or on a changing pad anywhere else in the house, because you want them to start associating this bathroom with the whole ordeal of peeing, pooping, changing underwear, diapers. You want that room associated with that. You want to associate going to the bathroom as much as you can with the room that you go to the bathroom in. That is where I usually say to start. Start there. If whether they're not crawling or whether they are crawling, you know, moving around, that is a first place to start if you're still in diapers. Is everything, if you change underwear or if you change diapers, start doing it in the bathroom. You know, I have a little changing pad I roll out on the floor and we do it there. If they can stand, Montessori would say to change their diaper while they're standing up, because they feel more independent and like less like a baby. It's just a part of her, you know, letting the child be independent and develop. Montessori says that kids learn through all five senses, and the more senses that you can attach to a learning experience, the better they're going to absorb it. So think about this with potty training. You know, we have five senses: smell, touch, taste, seeing, and hearing. So anything you can do to associate those with going to the bathroom and with the bathroom itself. And try to choose like one bathroom in the house where your potty training is going to be done. That is going to be helpful, especially if you have a large house. And you probably want to do it with, I mean, I guess you'd have to choose whichever one that the family life is lived around so that it's easy to get to during the day, or the one that's attached to their bedroom. We use the one that's downstairs in the middle of family life. So we have a half bathroom downstairs and a bathroom upstairs. I try to do everything downstairs as much as possible in that downstairs bathroom. But so Montessori says attach senses to it, all of your five senses, which I hesitate to give specific examples on this because I feel like that can hinder our ability to be creative because every family situation is different. Every schedule is different. All our, you know, relationship dynamics are different. There's like so many things that can come into play with this. You know, for hearing, think songs, potty songs, pee sounds or cues, sign language for sight, something for the mouth. Like some people choose to do treats. Montessori would say that that appeals to their baser instinct. Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. That's a whole nother podcast, actually. And I think we've done that before. If not, I'll be getting to that soon. But for the mouth, I mean, if they're still little, maybe putting pacifier in. Giving them a pacifier, sucking can be very comforting and relaxing. You have to be able to relax to release, you know, that might work. My kids don't take pacifiers for some reason. One out of five has. I've tried. For some reason, they just don't do it. So I have no specific experience. It's just an idea that something you could do to attach going to the bathroom with pacifier, comfort, you know, whatever. For touch, I don't know. Maybe the texture on the wall in your bathroom is different than the texture anywhere else in the house. I know that's true for us because we have a weird hodgepodge. Somebody tried to remodel it themselves house. So you could just show them to like put their hand on the wall and feel this different texture that's in the rest of the house. Or maybe just whether it's not different or it isn't different, maybe it's the same, but that still is something to maybe help with that. Maybe have like a basket of bathroom things that are sterilizable, like not necessarily, I don't want to say toys, but objects that they can work with while they're sitting there or just like holding their hand. Tips for girls, tips for boys. I don't know about the tips for girls. Girls, it seems to me, are more easy. My girl has been super easy. But I have noticed for boys that they are 6 years old and not wanting to wipe when they go number two. Like they're just not, they're afraid they're going to get poop on their hands. They're not used to it. And like something we've been trying to get them to do for years with many of them, they have been like this. So I think maybe a tip for boys would be to, you know, in the beginning, especially for in the beginning, if you're having them sit down to go to the bathroom, pee or poop, to every time have them wipe, and then they'll be used to trying to do that because there's a lot of angles involved and it can be messy if you don't get it right. So yeah, maybe trying to have them wipe from the very beginning would help them develop that easier and be more comfortable with wiping themselves. So here's the expectations part and I guess the how this is going to develop. You know, is in terms of once you get to one, you get to two, then once you get to two, move on to stage three. But do expect this to develop in stages and not in terms of like days, but maybe more in terms of like months. You know, it's different for every kid, but imagine you're going through like four stages of maybe wetting frequency. So like maybe stage one is they're wetting themselves three times a day and going number two in the potty, you know, once every 3 days, you know, that's pretty good at first. And then maybe stage two is they're wetting themselves twice a day. Stage three is they're wetting themselves once a day. And then maybe stage four is they're only having an accident like once every 3 or 4 days. My daughter is two and it's not as simple as that. It never is. That's why I'm saying, okay, here's this example. But my daughter is two and she can sometimes go for 3 days without an accident. And then for the next 2 days, she has three accidents a day. That was like the first 2 or 3 months. And now we're to the point where if she does go, she'll go a little bit and then she can hold it in. And you can physically see it. She's holding herself, putting her knees together and saying, pee, 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 pee. And then we're trying, okay, let's go to the bathroom and help her walk to the bathroom. So that's the stage we're at with her, is that at least if she does start to go, she'll notice it and then she can hold it in. So expect it to develop to develop in stages and slowly. Like, we're not talking about days, we're talking more about months. There are some anomalies where, you know, the child is two or three and they, someone sets a potty down, is like, oh, this is where you go pee, and then it's a girl, so they're super easy, and they just start going pee immediately. I mean, one of my really good friends, that was her oldest, was like that. So, like I said, every kid is different, so it's really hard to tack this down into certain stages, because everybody, every kid is different, and like I said, every family dynamic is different, and life changes, as we know this year, all the time. They might spend months in each stage, and that's normal, but they're still, don't think that they're not working on it while they're in these stages. They're just still developing, and they're further along than they were 3 months ago, hopefully. So also, if there's been a disturbance in the family, expect regressions or delays in development. And this could include moving, having a new baby, or, you know, adopting a child in the family, family staying in town at your house for a couple of days or a week, any big event. If there's a family wedding, there's like no schedule for 3 days because you have all these wedding events and stuff going on. Any introduction of stress into the family or disruptance of the child's schedule is, you know, what we're talking about here. And this can be true for weekends compared to school days. Also, if your child is in daycare, going to preschool, don't say, oh my gosh, well, weekends happen every week, so we shouldn't do this. It's not a reason to throw up your hands and not keep going and trying, but it is a reason to institute routines around going to the bathroom, going potty for the child, that can stay consistent throughout the weekend. So whatever you make your routine for during the week, keep that routine for the weekend. Whether it's like, this is how we wake up and go to the bathroom, or, you know, we always go potty or change the diaper right after snack or after lunch. Just keep as much consistency throughout the weekend as you can. And that is going to help. It will help with the stress or disruptance of schedule. A big thing that parents have trouble with is getting their kids interested in going, you know, having it not be a fight, basically. There's some great little tips. Montessori would say if, you know, before 5 or 6, that saying no doesn't really help anything. You're only introducing a negative, and it's really hard for a kid that young to switch their mind themselves. Like, if they have this image of something in their mind, and you say, no, you can't do that thing, it just reinforces that thing in their mind. So if they're like, I want a sucker, and you say, no, you can't have a sucker, just every time you say the word sucker, then they're thinking sucker again. I mean, I avoid the word pizza like a mad woman in my house. That is like, we do not say pizza. If we say pizza, everybody freaks out. Oh my gosh, we're having pizza. And it's like, no, we didn't say that. We didn't say we're having pizza. We literally just said the word pizza, maybe in context of like a movie that we watched or something somebody said the other day. But that's a word that, oh my gosh, everybody freaks out if you say that word. So it's the same for little kids. What works for little kids is redirection, saying, oh, I understand you want that. I understand you want a sucker. Let's go look at this. Can I come show you this over here? Something that they might be interested, literally a bird out the window, a squirrel, like just change the subject, basically. All you can do is change the subject with little kids. If they don't want to sit on the potty and you're trying to get them interested, try to give them choices or notice the characteristics of the thing you want to get them interested. So for an example, if they don't want to go, you can ask some questions, and then also have to do with the characteristics of the thing you're trying to do. So would you like to sit on the little potty or the big potty? And by the little potty, I mean the training potty on the floor, or the big potty, you know, with usually you have a potty seat. Even if you don't, a lot of kids can still handle that. So two characteristics there were little and big. You could call attention to the color. You could call attention to whether it's shiny or not. If there's images on their training potty, you could call attention to that. So that's another way to have it not be a fight. You don't reinforce that they don't want to go to the bathroom, but you just try to give options. So you're trying to give them power, and you're trying to basically change the subject, which we know as adults, it's still the same subject, but you're causing the child to focus on something different and not this power struggle of you're trying to make them do something and they don't. You want them to want to do it. So by getting them interested in it, then you're going to motivate them to do it. So if you're calling their attention to these differences, you can say, oh, you know, would you like to sit on the little one? Would you like to sit on the big one? Or, oh, what color is the little potty? What color do you want to sit on? Do you want to sit on the little green potty? You know, do you want to sit on white? Do you want to sit on green or do you want to sit on white? So you're reinforcing the word to sit on the potty and you're trying to get them interested in colors. Kids love colors. That's always fun. So just remember to change the subject. How can I change the subject? How can I re-interest them, draw them back in to what we're trying to accomplish? That's probably long enough for potty training at the moment. I think I mentioned on one of the past episodes that I am trying to write a potty training, not a book, but a potty training pamphlet, because I think if you have a 1.5-inch thick book on potty training, that is just way too much information, way overwhelming. And also, you don't need to know step 6 when you're just starting at step 1, usually. There are times when that can help, but if you have a little kid that's potty training, you might be a young family and have a lot of little kids, and it's hard to read 1.5-inch book when you have constant interruptions throughout the day and kids, you literally have to do everything for your kids because they can't do it for themselves yet. You know, hopefully there's not, if you do Montessori, there is less of that in general, but I mean, if you have a newborn, you're doing everything for them, so... I hope that you have benefited from this in some way, but this is my take on Montessori and potty training and how we approach it at home. There are other ways that people do it, you know, other methods that you could even tie into this if you would like. And also check out the links for the newborn potty training, even if your kid is too young for, you know, a newborn potty training book. If you're planning on having a baby, hey, try it next time. We did it and for the first like 4 months and it was really great. And what has helped my child that we did that with. That might be why she is so successful so young at potty training. So who knows? I think it's because she's a girl, but like I said, you know, it's hard to do studies on these things and put statistics and numbers to them. Also, who wants to put kids through that? But I hope you have gotten something out of this podcast and enjoyed it. This has been Danielle Mitchell on Montessori Mom Podcast. Thanks for listening.